Actually, we'll be interviewing as a team.
We're here to fuck shit up.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as
Jake
Stewart?
And I'm Matt.
And this is the Nuclear Fridge.
It's completely insane. You guys are idiots.
Do you have nuclear weapons?
In the fridge.
Is that nuclear waste?
This whole fridge is a joke.
Honey, you are a regular nuclear meltdown.
You and I are not so different.
Stupid fridge guys.
Well, to each his own.
Go to school, boys.
So we're going to talk about it. No, I'm kidding.
No, we're not.
I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we'll get it off the table. I have my hands infected, and it happened because I scared my dog at night, and my dog is a rescue, so his reaction to being scared is to bite, and he bit me. This was a particularly bad one. Actually, the wound is really small, so it was like, whatever, this will be fine tomorrow. I wake up, it looks like a surgical glove has been blown up, so...
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so...
Okay. I'm sorry, Maddie.
I hope so, and you're the one that made me bring it up on the podcast.
I thought we were just cutting this out. I thought you were just saying you were going to catch
me
out.
No, We don't cut anything out of this podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know.
Unless you beg me 3 days from now and you go, please, please!
I'm not going to beg you for this. This is your story.
All right.
I just was trying to be respectful to you, but okay.
How are you boys?
I was concerned about my friend.
Well, that's why we talked about it before the podcast, and then you said, oh, you're putting that up on the podcast.
Well, I thought it was going to be like a longer story.
No, it's not a fun story.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It was my fault too. I knew what I was doing. It's the thing, these things trigger your dog and you go, oh fuck, like I'm gonna be very careful not to do that. But then you let your guard down and then you like, oh, try to be playful with your dog. But then your dog kindly reminds you with a bite to the hand, don't do that to me at night, because you know that like at night I am scared as fuck.
Yeah, did you get it cleaned out well?
No, that's why it's infected.
Oh, so you didn't even clean it after?
I hoped I did. I did what I could.
That makes more sense.
And then I prayed I wouldn't need antibiotics, because this will be like the fifth time in 2 years I've had antibiotics. But nope, I got them, and hopefully they work.
What if you get dog powers?
Dog powers. I mean,
what are dog powers?
Like an incredible sense of smell and
lick your dick.
Oh yeah, yeah. You've got like tensile strength. Or wait, what? You got a bendy body to suck your wiener, to lick your wiener. I don't know what I'm doing.
I think I'm going way hairier.
Yeah, Matt. Are you foaming at the mouth? Are you okay?
You can like sit like a dog on your butt.
I mean, I'm fine. You could do that now.
My dog has rabies vaccine up to date. He has everything.
Well, that's good.
And I have everything. Hopefully, I'm pretty sure I do.
Probably.
I hope you don't have everything.
I don't want you to have like, you know.
You know, like the COVID vaccine, and no. we're gonna
chlamydia.
Get one of those little labels.
Well, for episode 150, I put together a pretty fucking rad Jeopardy game show.
Let's go. I'm gonna do awful.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of it. I think it's gonna be funny. There's some great topics, there's some funny questions. However, no one could really make today, because we want to include Mikey and Jay in this as well, as we typically do for these milestones. So it'll be 151 will be the Nuclear Fridge game show. I spent like 4 hours yesterday working on this thing.
Because
I was like trying to format it in Excel, and I was like, I can block out this cell, and then when you ask it, and then I just Googled, I was like, you know, there's probably just like a Jeopardy maker online, and sure enough there is one. So
hey, that's awesome.
Could have saved like, you know, probably 2 hours, although most of the time I spent like researching the questions. But there's some good ones. There's some good ones, and I really want to tell you guys the topics, but I don't think I can yet. I think I gotta wait because I don't want you to hear the topics, start thinking about them, look up facts about these things. So
I'm gonna go in blind because I don't expect to do well already.
So. Oh, I'm gonna make you guys go in blind. Like I'm not saying the topics.
I mean,
but yeah, hopefully next week we'll have us three and then Mikey and Jay, and we'll do Nuclear Fridge Jeopardy.
Let's go. What do we win? What if we win?
Matt will smooch the winner.
I will.
Is there tongue or?
There's whatever you want it to be.
Oh, okay.
You can you can figure that out with Matt.
Winner's choice.
Yeah.
And if Matt wins, what does he do then?
If Matt wins, you don't want to know. It's pretty sick and twisted.
Yeah, you know, I get to tongue myself.
He uses his dog powers.
With those
powers,
dog powers.
Yes, hell yeah, brother.
Dude, I don't have knuckles on this hand right now.
God damn.
That does not sound good. It is.
Dude, yeah. You could be one of those balloon people in front of stores.
I could. It's also
Have you tried masturbating with it yet?
No.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
It hurts. I can't hold
but
my
maybe,
phone.
But what if you like got off on the pain and it distracted you once you released?
I am not risking getting a fucking swollen hand fetish.
I mean, it would
your biggest concern.
Your biggest concern is that you'd like too much.
Well, yeah. That's one of them for sure. That's top two.
I just mean it would distract you from the pain for a little bit.
Is it? I remember in high school people talking about something where you'd sit on your hand until it was numb and then.
The stranger.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about? That's a thing. What is
Matt,
this?
Explain it to Stuart.
So the stranger is when you sit on your hand. Some people would do their left hand or their like non-dominant hand.
Okay.
But you would sit on your hand until like it went numb and you'd have no feeling in it. And then you would jack yourself off and it would feel like someone else is giving you a hand job.
Are you fucking kidding?
I
mean, I know you're not kidding because Jake knows of it too.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. And do you think, no, it doesn't really work.
I don't think people
actually did this stuff. It was just a joke. Well, I'm sure people have tried.
No, I'm saying to you, it doesn't really feel like someone else is jerking you off.
So people have tried it.
Some people have tried it, yes. And I can confirm that it doesn't work.
Okay, through outside sources, though.
Have you ever tried the autoerotic asphyxiation with, like, a belt?
No.
Oh, okay. You don't want to end up like Carradine?
Died because of that.
Carradine died.
David Carradine, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm calling him Carradine like I know him, but yeah.
Carradine. Well, there's that. You got to be careful because someone might think you're talking about someone named Cara Dean.
Oh, yeah, no, David Carradine. My apologies.
Yeah.
Who's a great actor?
I don't know. He was a fun movie guy.
He was a fun man. He was a fun actor. Come on.
He was a fun actor. I wouldn't call him a great actor, but.
I thought he was a fun actor.
He was in some. He was in some good movies.
Yeah, I mean the Carradines all have a certain charm to them.
Yeah, I. There's also that movie with Robin Williams where the son is into that. So you know Juno from Spy Kids, a much talked about movie on this podcast.
Yeah.
So in I think it's called Father of the Year.
I remember that movie. I didn't see it, but I remember it.
Yeah, I think it's called Father of the Year, and it's Robin Williams, and he's like a teacher who's just like kind of it's World's Greatest Dad, and it's he's a teacher, he's kind of a loser, like he wants to be a writer, but his work isn't getting published. And he kind of has like, he's like, he's got like a fling going on with one of the other teachers at work. But like, she's kind of like, he's kind of a loser. He's not cool like some of the other teachers. And his son is way into autoerotic asphyxiation. But he's also kind of a shitty kid. So everyone's like, ah, we fucking hate your kid. Your kid needs to go to like military school or whatever. He needs to be disciplined. But then at some point, the kid dies from autoerotic asphyxiation. And instead of like revealing that to the world, Robin Williams uses his writing talent to write a suicide note that's ghostwritten for his kid. And then it's kind of like a movie about like how we remember people versus how we lived with them. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty dark movie. It for me as a depressed teenager, it was hard for me to watch, especially when like your childhood like favorite dad is in the fucking movie and he's like depressed and sad and. Man, it is it's a hard watch, but it's pretty good.
I'll have to check it out.
Some breaking news here. If I'm reading this right, this is a very confusing worded article.
Is it involving
article.
A director?
It is.
I know what you're talking about.
Do you know, Matt?
Oh, is it Martin Scorsese?
No. Quentin Tarantino has taken a step back and decided that The Movie Critic will not be his 10th and final. I mean, it'll be his 10th film, but it won't be his final film.
Oh, is I thought it was really? That he scrapped doing that movie.
Oh, is that what it was? It? Yeah, this article doesn't make any fucking sense. Maybe it's because...
I thought it was that he's not doing that as his final film anymore.
Oh, so he's just not doing that
Let
movie
me,
anymore?
Maybe. Well,
I think you're right. Reading this, it kind of seems like... Yeah.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
You're right. He changed his mind.
Quentin Tarantino... drops the movie credit. Did you know there was like a weird rumor that was like people were just like spreading this rumor on the internet that Shane Gillis was cast to star in that movie?
What?
And then like on one of his podcast episodes, he's like, I'm not in Quentin Tarantino's movie.
We've talked about how big of fans of Quentin Tarantino we are. I think he shot himself in the fucking foot saying he's only doing 10.
Yeah, I mean,
I think mistake.
Like, I wonder if he feels more pressure to like really make sure this one is good. I mean, he had already written this a couple times, right? And
well, that's what I mean though. There's probably some cool projects that are like being dropped because he's like, I don't want that to be my last movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like,
it seems bizarre.
I mean, like he had the period where it was going to be Kill Bill 3, maybe, and then there was this, and it's just like, I mean, like I'm sure now most of his decision making is just going to be on, is that the note I want to end on, as opposed to is that going to be a dope project to do?
It's so weird to me. I think people can be a little. I know Tarantino is not for everyone as like a person as a character. In the world, but like the guy loves film, but he also like knows a lot about the business, so I feel weird questioning him, but like, man, why just 10 films?
I feel like that's like almost a like kind of, I mean, like I know there's that part I'm sure in his head where he doesn't want to overstay his welcome and get to a point where he's making movies that aren't so good, but I don't even know if he'd ever get to that point. And if he did get to that point, I feel like making it based upon the number of movies is a mistake. And I mean, I'm not him. It's just his choice.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you look at people like Martin Scorsese who are still cranking out bangers. And
yeah, I was going to say, like the caliber that he's at as a director, I can't imagine
him
he
just
would
putting
get
a dud
to the
out.
Point. And especially because the you know, like he has so much clout, like he's not going to put out a bad movie, right? Like he's not going to be forced to release something because the studio says he needs to release something. When you're Quentin Tarantino, you release something when you're confident and ready. So it seems bizarre. I mean my whole thing, or like my whole prediction, is that he's going to say this is like his 10th film, and then he's going to do like a TV series. Like I think he'll do a book or a TV series. Yeah. He's already written a book, to be fair. But I think he'll like do more adjacent stuff and then eventually, like in 10, 15 years, come back and make a movie, and it'll be like a whole comeback thing, and it'll be, you know, all the marketing will be like Quentin Tarantino's first film in 15 years or whatever. That's where my money's at, because I just can't see him stopping, you know, like, and especially like hearing especially Scorsese, but I'm sure a lot of people like Nolan also have that sort of feeling where it's like, you just have that desire to tell a story, and you kind of need to, like, it's stuck inside of you, and you have to do it. And I imagine, like, you can't just make 10 films and be like, yep, that's it. This drive is gone. This arbitrary number is where my, like, drive to make film ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah. And the thing is what? I think he's like early 60s, right? I don't know. But even when you still see him talk about it, he's like, it's his passion is still very clearly there. You know, if he was on these last couple of movies, like, kind of in that mindset of maybe he is kind of over it, then I would 100% get it. But he doesn't come across like, oh, his passion's not quite there anymore. Like, he seems still very much invested and loving film, and it's odd to see someone who has that much love and appreciation kind of tap themselves out. And I mean like Jake said, I don't know if that'll truly be the end, but if it was, I think it would be a major loss, because the man knows how to make a goddamn movie.
Yeah, and one thing he was on we've talked about before, but he was on Your Mom's House, and he said that, like, he wants to be one of those filmmakers where when he releases a movie, people go to see it and they're like, I need to see Quentin Tarantino. And it's like, ah, but you know what? He kind of had those few movies that were kind of bad. And it's, I mean, I think he, since he's such a, like, film history buff too, he sees these directors throughout the, like, course of film's life. And he sees a lot more of that than we do, because, like, I don't know, man. I'm still fucking excited for, like, the four movies that Martin Scorsese is attached to.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
all of them star... Okay, three of four of them star Leonardo DiCaprio.
I mean, it's one of those things when you have people that are, like... I mean, even for directors that have, like, you know, a miss, you know, there's a certain caliber to a point. Or maybe not even a miss, but just something that maybe wasn't your favorite of theirs. You know, there's a point when you're a director like Tarantino or Scorsese where it doesn't even matter, because you know the craftsmanship that's behind those movies regardless. And there's never going to be a point where I'd be like, I don't want to see Scorsese's new movie, or I don't know about Quentin Tarantino's next project. Like, I do agree that old school element of Hollywood is going away a little bit, but there are still those heavy hitters that people will go see their fucking movie because it's their movie, and he is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's one of the few, right? Like, I feel like people
him,
go to Scorsese, the
theaters.
Yeah, people go to the theaters to see Nolan, Quentin Tarantino. Scorsese to a lesser extent, to be honest. Like, I feel like a lot of people didn't go see Killers of Flower Moon.
I think it still did fairly well.
Though. It did, I think it did well. I'm just saying to the level that, like,
Oppenheimer
or like, I remember everyone saw Django Unchained. You know, like
I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did really well too.
Yeah, like I think there's just sort of a different scale, I guess, and like not it is not indicative of anyone's skill level or talent or who's better than the other. I think it's just like, Nolan and Tarantino are very good at connecting with, like, mass audiences that Scorsese has been and can be, but I don't think Scorsese's thinking about that necessarily, you know?
No, I mean, even some of his more, I don't think Silence was a movie that made it that much money,
yeah,
but it's a damn good movie. It's just, I think, well, I mean, with, I think the thing with, you have, I mean, with their most recent movies, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I mean Tarantino's also really good about getting people in purely just based on cast as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he always just got these stellar castings. Like, I guess I could see with Killers of the Flower Moon, maybe it being such a somber, depressing piece that there are going to be some people who just don't want to see that.
Three and a half hours long, too.
Well, that too. But I mean, even Oppenheimer and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood are both, I think, over 3 hours. So I think, but those aren't as, you know, dark and depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, Oppenheimer has that, but it's paced like a thriller, you know.
It doesn't show you the Japanese getting bombed.
And
either.
it's about the man, where Killers of the Flower Moon is a very, you know, slow, depressing film.
Hear the horrors.
And you just need to kind of wallow in it. And I can see where that maybe that isn't as appealing to see. But then again, you go back and then you go to a movie like Wolf of Wall Street where fucking everyone went to go see it.
Yeah.
So I think subject matter, I'm sure, had a little bit to do with that. But there's no doubt that those, I mean, sure, there are some directors, I think, that the movies, it's going to kind of depend on a movie. Like, I don't think Spielberg's latest movies have made a shit ton of money in comparison to some of the things he's done in the past, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I don't actually know if I'd put Spielberg with those three now, though, as far as audience poll anymore. I mean, I think Steven Spielberg has cemented himself as a legend in Hollywood. It's just, I don't know if he has the same pull as some of these other directors anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's changing priorities too, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
He's not still making Jaws movies. He's making like The Fabelmans was a very personal film.
Right.
Clearly, yeah. You know? And like, I love that movie and the people who saw it loved it, but like, an audience isn't going to want to see that. Or like a big audience isn't necessarily going to want to see that. While like, I feel like, you know, a premise like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or a premise of Inglourious Bastards or Django Unchained, like that excites people so much more. And once again, nothing wrong with it. Like, to be like, I don't know. I'm not making any money off these movies, so I don't care how much they make. All I want is people to support these films, and it seems like enough people do typically. Like, for the most part, you know, like, people will see Scorsese films to make it worth it. You know, people see Spielberg films make it worth it.
Yeah, I mean, if they weren't worthwhile, they wouldn't be making movies still, unless they were self-funded, because that's just not how it works.
Yeah, although, I mean, you know, they need to make something. Studios are probably willing to work with Scorsese, even if it means their money isn't going to get a return on it. Because,
I mean, I'm sure with them also, they have that. I mean, you know, it's going to be an Apple streaming service movie. I'm sure they're going to have part of the mindset being some of that profit being just from getting those who maybe don't want to see it in a theater right now and would like to be at home. So they're going to get some streaming money from it. So I think them calculating the success of it isn't going to be purely based on what did it make at the theater. And plus, I mean, how long did it take for Killers to end up on Apple?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Wasn't it?
October to December, maybe? I'm not sure.
Okay.
I feel like I just remember someone saying 6 weeks. That could be wrong.
Maybe. I mean, I do remember it wasn't a giant amount of time. So I wouldn't be stunned if there was a large part of the audience that did wait to watch it on Apple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I bet Apple also threw a lot of money at that because they were like, it's going to get some Academy Awards. It's going to be our like big critical film. And 100%. Then it got snubbed.
Did get snubbed. I mean,
fair, like a lot of studios just fund those movies for the awards and not necessarily the return, you know. But yeah, with streaming, it's wildly different, right? Because my dad loved that film, but he didn't go to a theater. He just watched it on Apple Plus, and like, I don't know how that revenue split works at all.
Well, that's the thing is like that movie could have been where it's hard for, unless you're, you know, running, you know, that branch of Apple, it's hard. I'm sure that movie was much more successful than we think it was.
Yeah.
Because streaming, I mean, it's just, it opens that door for so many people who maybe don't go to theaters or who, like, I mean, like you said, I mean, it is a 3+ hour movie. There are going to be people who want to be able to pause it and go to the bathroom or take a break, which is fine. I mean, but it does make it though, like, just I genuinely would be curious to see something about like the differences in terms of releasing them also on streaming and seeing like how much like revenue for the service comes into it.
Yeah, because I don't understand. I mean, I understand how someone like Apple or Amazon have a streaming service because they get their revenue from all these other places. So it's like a value add.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the fuck Netflix has a business. I mean, they're paring down their original studio. Like didn't they just lay off like 90% of the people?
God, I don't know. Probably. I mean, given how this year has gone.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Not 90% of Netflix though, just 90% of their original.
Their like original team.
Because I was gonna say that's a lot of people.
Yeah, Yeah, but like that's the kind of thing is like whenever I talk to someone about financial stuff or business, I go, you know what? I don't understand how like $18 a month from like one person, multiply that by like however many people there are subscribed to Netflix, just once a month equals out to here's a like $60 million movie that then how do you like get the money back on that, because you're also doing like three different TV shows and then you're doing a bunch of series that are all getting canceled after the second season.
I mean, you gotta do some of the outside advertising away from your platforms.
Yeah, there's you do the advertising on top of that for all your I just don't understand. I mean, I guess that was part of the strike, right? Is like, oh man, maybe we've been getting away with like real fucking murder of people's wages, and maybe like a whole originals team getting shrunk down to like nobody is what happens when people get paid fairly, which I want people to get paid fairly, and I don't care how much original shit Netflix has, but it definitely makes you wonder, like, how does a studio that only does like streaming even fucking live?
I mean, I'm sure they're
Apple just needs to sell a bunch of iPhones and then they can make like one movie. Like,
well, I mean, not only that, they have like their whole, you know, music streaming service. They have so much that brings them money.
It's just a value add for them. Right. Like, it's just like, hey, do you also want like original content? Because this is a drop in a bucket for Apple. This is like Disney can just lose money on a streaming service because they're making money off of like all the theater shit that they are that they're putting out, like all the Marvel stuff, and then but also since you're such a big Disney fan, here, buy this value-added service that we've just put together because we want to be relevant in this space too. How Netflix does that and competes, I have no fucking clue. That just doesn't make sense at all to me.
I mean, I'm sure part of it is investors. I wouldn't be surprised if they have some pretty decent investors there. But at the same time with Netflix is they have that mixed, you know, way of operating where they do have a ton of original content, some of which, you know, it would just financially wouldn't be feasible for them to properly advertise all of that content. But then at the same time, they're also still buying rights to things that are made and competing with other streamers and studios. So it does come to a point where you wonder when that does kind of crumble. And it's not like one of those things I don't want that to happen. I mean, I've watched and enjoyed enough on Netflix. I think it's a solid streamer still. But I do think for them to work, they are going to have to start really putting a focus on certain things to remain financially in a place where they can operate.
Yeah, agreed. Also, actually, you mentioned Silence there. So Martin Scorsese has four movies. It was just announced today that he's eyeing a Frank Sinatra biopic starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, come
haven't
on.
They been talking about that come for like a decade on. Now? Like,
I have no idea.
Why Leonardo? Like, I love Leo.
Leo
Frank
seems
Sinatra,
like a weird pick.
Like, come yeah. on.
Come and on. I would want someone who can actually sing because I just can't stand biopics.
Where they don't actually sing.
Musical biopics.
Drives me insane.
I say that I have been following this Frank Sinatra biopic for so fucking long. It's not happening.
Yeah, who knows?
Like, this got announced like 10 years ago that he was working on it. And yeah, I can't imagine. It's happening.
I mean, if it happened, it'd be great, but I would.
I mean, I hope so.
It would be not. I wouldn't. I mean, goddamn. Leo's a great actor, but I wouldn't want it to be Leo.
Who'd you want it to be?
Frank Sinatra? I mean, I'm with Matt, number one, someone who's actually going to fucking sing. I don't care if they sound, you know, a little different or any of that. Like, I instantly just dock points for actors that don't do the singing in a musical biopic.
Love and Mercy, by the way, the movie Love and Mercy, it's about Brian Wilson. I saw that this past weekend. My dad suggested it. It was his turn to pick a movie. I was like, oh my God, I cannot fucking do this. One of the best fucking biopics I've ever seen in my life. It is so good. It's about Brian Wilson and his struggles with mental illness in two periods of his life. Really, really, really good. Paul Dano's in it. John Cusack plays older Paul Dano. Anyway, I just want to get that out of the way. But a Frank Sinatra actor, I don't know. Who do you think?
I don't know.
I was thinking John Hamm.
Thinking John Hamm too, but to be fair, I mean, I think Leo has the look, I would say. Like, I could see, I just can't hear him, you know? I could see him, but I just can't hear him as Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
I'm looking up who could play Frank Sinatra.
I don't know.
Hugh Jackman. Tom Holland's on this list.
No. I could maybe see Fassbender.
Harry Connick Jr.
Harry Connick Jr.
Yeah, he could play him, and he could do the singing too.
I mean, I don't know. Chris Pine can sing.
Robert Downey Jr. is on this list, which would be a weird one.
I mean, would it be any weirder than Leo?
Yeah, Leo's number one on this list.
That's bizarre to me.
That's so funny. Yeah, I would peg him as someone.
Honestly,
peg him. Hell yeah, dude.
Honestly, I could guess. Like, I guess I could kind of.
Tom Hardy,
Hugh Jackman, Tom Hardy.
Of course, Stewart's like I can kind of see Hugh Jackman. Favorite actor
when
of
when
all
you
time.
See no, I mean when you see him, I don't know. I mean, I do love Hugh Jackman. When you see like some of the like older pics of Sinatra, like I could kind of.
How about
see
Bradley
that.
Cooper?
Yeah, Bradley Cooper. I think
he needs a win after Maestro.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's doing that Frank Sinatra movie for Martin Scorsese. He's also doing a Roosevelt movie starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh,
which
there's a point where it's just like, come on.
There are other actors, Marty.
Like, you could be in the movie, but starring him, I don't know.
Hey, I don't know. To be fair, if I was a film director that could basically get anything greenlit I wanted, I would always hire my friends every single fucking time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
that's fair.
People make fun of Adam Sandler for going on vacation with every movie, but like,
yeah,
Christ,
but he's not casting his friends for Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, that's true. But Adam Sandler would cast like
Adam Sandler,
Rob Schneider as Frank Sinatra.
And, you know, at the very least, like, it doesn't feel like Scorsese's just writing, or it doesn't feel like DiCaprio's just writing. Like, DiCaprio still gives a good performance.
He does.
I'm not thrilled about the thought of that, I know, like, Martin Scorsese's not, or I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to half-ass it, at least.
That's true. I mean, I would hope if he did it, though, like, goddamn, you better actually get singing fucking lessons or something.
I'm way more excited for him to play Roosevelt, though, because
that feels more in line with
that
Leo.
Feels cool.
Yeah, I cannot stand biopics where they don't sing, like actually sing. And I know like Frank Sinatra is like an icon, and his voice is just
it's a hard voice to do.
But at the same time, you know, we've had movies that have done it where maybe they didn't sound exact, but they still sounded damn good. I feel like as long as you hit the essence, I think that's the important factor there.
Russell Crowe in a fat suit.
does he, would he need one for the role?
No, that's not nice.
I mean, I don't just give mean him it in a mean
from
way,
unhinged.
Like,
I mean, from if, unhinged.
Unhinged, unhinged, he would be fine.
Yeah. Russell Crowe unhinged playing Frank Sinatra.
Well, I saw a movie yesterday.
Oh wait, we haven't finished Martin Scorsese.
No, we're
yet.
Done.
He's got. I just want to mention.
I know
these
he
two
has
the Jesus
movie.
Which, yeah. So he's doing a sequel to the Bible.
Yeah, he's doing Bible 2.
He better have a goddamn. He better get. I think the rumor was he's going to get Andrew Garfield, who would be great. But
that is. That is, yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what it sounds like.
He should just bring back Willem Dafoe.
He's also doing an adaptation of David Grand's new novel, which David Grand is the writer
the
of
Wager.
Killers of the Flower Moon, The Wager. And guess who's starring in that?
Is it Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Good on him.
All right, Jake. Yeah, I'll pass it to you.
I saw the first Omen last night.
Ah.
Did you see it, Stuart?
I did.
Of course you did. What did you think?
I personally thought it was great.
Yeah, me too. Thought it was great. Really liked it.
I was like pleasantly surprised and was just like, it had been a, it's been a minute since I like kind of was in a movie like this, just like actually like kind of like just disturbed and being like, this is just fucking awful. And not in the movie's bad, just like
disturbing.
It's so disturbing and bleak to a point where I was like, and after watching it, like I was talking to Jay a little bit about this, but the first Omen had what I was missing from Immaculate, which, because they kind of have similar premises, but that, like, just, I think, harsh, like, almost, like, just barbaric factor that's there in the first Omen, I just felt wasn't quite as effective in Immaculate. Where with first Omen, I mean, I remember, like, when I was, like, dead silent, just, like, soaking it in.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually something Wait, did I already bring it up on the podcast about my experience seeing First Omen or no?
I don't
know.
Think so.
Oh my God. Honestly, which is like the ironic thing because it's First Omen, this movie basically, it may have installed my faith in God. So I saw Immaculate in Late Night with the Devil, which I did talk with you guys about. Immaculate in particular, I had a horrid experience in the theater with teenagers.
Yeah, I remember.
That we discussed.
That we did.
So I went to go see Monkey Man, and I saw that with some friends. And afterward, I haven't had as much time to go to movies. I was like, there's a screening for First Omen. I want to go see First Omen really bad. No one else wanted to see it. So I was like, fine, I'll go see First Omen. So I get done with that. I went to go get... I got my brother. I was gonna stay a little longer because they have like these like Phantom Menace popcorn buckets, and my brother loves like the tin buckets, and he likes Phantom Menace. So I was like, I'll go back and get him that. And then I just convinced myself I'm just gonna go see Omen. It was like a 10 o'clock showing, and so I get to the hall where these movies are, and First Omen has a fucking line out of it,
Wow.
I'm like, oh no. I like just saw, seeing that alone, it was a line of just teenagers, the type of ilk I never want to see inside of a theater. And I instantly in my head, before I even walked down the hall, was like, I don't know if I want my experience with this movie to be like mine with Immaculate. So I get down there and I realize, oh, this isn't a line. These are fucking people not being allowed in the theater. And
because it was rated R.
So there's a guy, which I couldn't see, who's standing in front of the door that is requiring an ID.
Hell yeah, brother.
And
oh, that's amazing.
Guys, this is like after we had that whole discussion on here about like how I was like, now that I'm an adult, I'm like I kind of am sad now that, you know, people aren't like screening people going into movies anymore, really, because they just don't really care now. I almost had tears in my eyes. I was like, so this guy is standing there and he wasn't letting people in. And the even bigger part, which makes me even more of a hypocrite from back in the day, was one of them had an older brother that wouldn't let them in because they weren't the parent.
I remember that story.
Granted, when I was younger, that pissed me off. Now
you were like, eat shit, kid.
I was so happy. So no fucking joke. The guy standing at the door, he's like this nice older gentleman at the door, not letting any of these kids in. And all these kids are like whining and bitching, like, well, can we get our tickets back? Can we do this? Can we do that? And they all have like, they're all on their phones and shit, whining. And I'm already instantly like, oh my God, this guy. I literally walked to the door and I shook his hand and I said, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for your service.
I genuinely was so happy. And I went into that theater. There was no incessant talking. No one was on their fucking phones.
Dude.
It was such a good experience. And before I shook his hand, I looked at the line of them and like smiled. And then I looked at him and said, thank you. And he was like, yeah, he's like, I think it's time that this starts. He brought up that they've said to him now for R-rated flicks and things like that, that they're kind of reinstating these things because they've had a lot of complaints for young people in theaters. And I was like, just the timing of it. I was like, you know, I'm about to watch a movie about the Antichrist. And I was like, this is just a beautiful thing. I was so happy. I was genuinely so, so happy. Like I like sat there, and even though the movie is extremely disturbing, like the first like 20 minutes, I kind of was just like sitting in silence, smiling, because I was just like, this is lovely. Like I hadn't been in a theater that quiet in so long for like a horror movie. And it's not a movie really even meant for like, oh, we're going to have the audience like have constant jump scares for audience to scream anyway. So if that theater was filled with annoying people, it would have just made me extremely angry. So I just need to give a shout out to Cinemark for doing that. And I hope you continue to do it, because fuck them kids.
Well, there was like no one in the theater when I saw it. There was like three other people. So it was pretty good. It was
fucking badass, dude.
Yeah, it was a good experience. Movie was great. I was going to say one thing I've been like telling people who've asked me like, oh, what'd you think of it? I've been saying like how like stylistically it felt pitch perfect in a sense where it was like, it felt like it wasn't trying to be like a modern horror film, but it also didn't feel like it was trying too hard to be like the original. Like it just kind of struck a nice balance that felt, I don't know. It just felt like the director, I forget her name, had like a very unique and interesting voice that still paid tribute to the original, but like felt kind of groundbreaking in its own way. And visually, I thought it was stunning. Like that
was
trailer,
gorgeous.
Yeah, I remember seeing that trailer with you, Stuart, for the first time. I think we were seeing Night Swim actually, or something. And I was,
it
like,
was
oh my
Night
God.
Swim because we were,
I was
like,
why can't we be seeing that movie instead? And I was a little worried that it might be like all visuals,
just a trailer,
and no depth. And I do think some of the visuals for that trailer were not actually in the film. I have to watch the trailer again, but there were certain things that I remember from the trailer that I don't remember seeing in the movie, but I still, you know, I thought it was great. And I really liked the characters. It felt very character driven, to be honest, in a way that really surprised me.
Nell Tiger Free is so fucking good in it.
Yeah.
Like I think the thing that took me the most back about it was, I appreciated that there are very few jump scares in it. Number one.
Yeah. And the ones that are there are good. They don't feel like they're there just to be jump scares. They really feel like they make sense in what's like, there's no stupid shit. Like
it was a cat.
Yeah. Or but like they make sense at least, you know, like how sometimes jump scares like break reality just to be a jump scare, and it's like, wait a second, how does that make sense, you know?
Yeah, like why,
like
no
doors slamming behind
right,
people,
right? I mean, I think it worked also because I mean, this is honestly probably one of the few examples of a it's like, not because it's not a remake, it is a prequel, but it doesn't, for me, it did not feel, I mean, kind of like you were saying, it didn't feel pushy that, oh, this is a prequel to The Omen. It felt like it had its own voice. And by the time it ends, even, it's like, I mean, honestly, like, you know, even with like the original, it's like you don't have to see it to make this movie, to enjoy this movie. You'll get a couple little like, oh, that's, hey, I know that guy. But like, other than that, I don't know. It's been a minute since I can't think of the last time I was in a theater, though, with like just having that unrelenting feeling of horror. And not, yeah, it, like, just a slow, like, just really uncomfortable time, but in, a, like, a really surprisingly, like, for a universal horror release, like, holy shit. Like, it did not feel like one of those movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, kind of what I was worried about, was that it would just kind of blend together. Like, not to shit on Night Swim again, but like the way that movie is shot and directed feels like every single horror movie, you know, like every single right, kind of bad horror film. And I was like a little worried about that, but immediately, like, I was like, oh no, this is this has its a unique voice to it that I found pretty compelling. And what's crazy to me is that the director, Arkesha Stevenson, this is her first feature film, as far as I can tell. Like, she's done TV series.
I think she did Legion, which I really liked.
Legion, but it's a TV series, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, besides that, she has one short, at least on IMDb, she's got a couple shorts, but, like, Vessels from 2015. And has not done a feature film. I was like, super impressed. I hope she does more.
Phenomenal first theatrical film.
I was super impressed by it.
She directed the third season of Channel Zero. I don't know if you've seen Channel Zero, Jake, but it's a cool like anthology series on Shudder.
I have not. But yeah, I mean, I know she's done like a lot of TV stuff. But it was just surprising, like when I was like, what else has she done? And I was like, oh, movies
to
really.
This caliber. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah. When it started, I was like, oh, they probably pulled this director because she had done a bunch of like really good cult horror films and they thought would work. And I was like, no, nothing.
I mean, it's a good example, kind of though. I mean, I think I said it with Night Swim, despite. Or feelings on Night Swim of taking chances with certain directors on projects. And this is a perfect example of getting somebody and kind of giving them a chance and it working extremely fucking well.
Yeah.
Because Night Swim, I mean, I still think it's cool that they gave the director of the short, you know, a chance at a theatrical release and all that. Like, I still, despite the movie, think that that was really cool of Universal to do. And I'm sure it didn't cost them a shit ton to make. But yeah, I mean, to have a horror movie like released by Universal that's rated R and is like not afraid to kind of almost do like the Exorcist sort of thing of just kind of dwelling on something disturbing on screen.
Make
without,
you as uncomfortable
just,
as
yeah,
possible.
Without it having to be jump scares or something cheap.
I do think a big reason as to why that movie was as uncomfortable as it was because... like a man didn't direct it, like not to be like,
oh no, I agree
but
with
like
you.
So many of the themes and sequences and ideas behind it, I feel like there's a certain terror of that men probably never feel, never do feel because they can't have kids. So right. I think that works so much to its favor. Like some of the way things are shot is just like, you know, I don't want to say never because, but like, I was like, I don't think a man would have made this as dreadful as it currently is in this moment.
That, yeah, no, I 100% agree. It's also, it helps that it's shot in a lot of those scenes very claustrophobically. And it's very, like, much about, like, you know, when it comes to, like, Margaret's, like, whole... journey in that movie, like there's a lot of scenes where it's just kind of a close-up of her eyes,
yeah,
but she's so good and it like conveys so much when you see so little with some of it. And then there's other times you see something and you're like, oh Jesus Christ.
I don't want to say what happens, but that nun, that was like, I was like, what's happening? And I was like, oh
fuck.
Anyway,
I was shocked that I would say that a prequel to The Omen is so far one of my favorite movies this year, but it is.
Yeah. I loved it.
I'm very happy to hear that. Like, I haven't seen it yet. I'm being quiet because I haven't seen it yet, everyone. I'm very excited for it.
You should have just been like, I fucking hated it.
I know. I was like this after the silence. It was awful.
But we were talking about being nice to movies before the podcast, and it's like, I don't want to start.
I mean, we did just already assault Night Swim two more times. So.
Okay, but you know what's great about Night Swim is that it at least was like really funny. Maybe not intentionally, but
oh
like,
no, we got Jake and I when we saw
we
it,
got
we laughed.
Joy out of it. I just keep thinking every time you guys are having that conversation, I just kept thinking about fucking Wyatt Russell Can you put me beside
the pool? Just one more time. Take could you put me in the pool?
Yeah, it's just a fucking heroin addict. So weird about his pool, man.
I'm just, you know, I think the saddest thing I could say for this movie is it did not do well.
Yeah.
And it makes me so sad.
Oh, man.
Because I
heard it was really good, and it was like kind of skirting that legacy horror reboot type thing.
Well, it's a thing too, is because it is, but it doesn't really until, I mean, like there's a sequence that connects it, but other than that, it's very much its own thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, its budget, I know, was around like 30 million. I don't know what it's made.
36.2 million.
Oh, it's in the clear.
Okay.
We're
it's
safe.
In the clear, at least. I just want it to be known that movies like this are fucking appreciated. I just want movies like that to do better, because it is unfortunate that it is like, does have that whole like, oh, it's an Omen prequel, when we've had so many movies that have done that with like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and these other properties that have just been awful. And this is one of those cases that it's not. And I'm wondering if maybe it didn't do extremely well, partially because of that, because people now are kind of on to that like whole like half-assed, hey, we got a property, let's use it approach.
Yeah. One thing we didn't really touch on too is like the supporting cast was really good too. Like Ralph Ineson, I did not know he was in that.
Dude, every time he's in a movie.
Bill Nye was in it. I didn't know, I forget his name. Charles Dance was in it. Like, oh man, the cast was, I was surprised. Like, because, you know, like the kind of like trend for these reboot horror prequel sequel movies is like they make them as cheaply as possible. And I was surprised to see, like, I guess Ralph Ineson isn't like the biggest actor ever, but like,
no,
to
but
see
he's
both Bill Nye, Charles Dance. And like, I was like, oh man, they like, they found some people and they all fit that role very well.
They do. And it helps also that there was a lot of great set work too. I mean, I know there were some scenes, obviously they couldn't film where they filmed, and I'm sure they had some screens and stuff like that. But, for the most part, there was a lot of set work that was really well done. I'm happy you brought up that you saw it, cause I wasn't going to really bring it up, cause I don't like going on my one man tangents without someone else having seen it.
Well, speaking of which, did you see Arcadian?
Is it out?
Yeah, it's out. I saw it.
Oh, you're the way you said that, you didn't like it.
No, it is good. It wasn't great, but it was good. There's a few things that really bug me about it. There's two things in particular that really bug me about it.
Annoying kids.
Yeah, I mean, they're like okay, and then they're not okay, and then it's kind of cringy. And then the other thing is, like, Nicolas Cage is Nicolas Cage, but he's not in it as much as he should be, in my opinion.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's okay.
He's still got long legs this year.
I can't wait for that.
I'm so fucking excited.
Yeah, that's one of my most anticipated for sure.
Same, man. Yeah, that.
Is this a movie, Matt, or a short film? Did you watch this?
Yeah, I just sent it to you guys.
Have you seen it, or did you just look it up?
I just looked it up.
I'll have to check it out.
When it's a short film, I just go, all right, where can I watch this? Sometimes you have to buy them on Apple, but it's worth it, man. I still haven't found time to go to the movie theater. It's such a bummer.
I mean, I still need to see. I didn't see Sting. I wanted to see Sting.
Fuck that.
What's Sting?
I'm waiting till I can turn it off to watch that one.
Do you not? Is that because you don't like spiders, or because you don't
think
it looks good?
Spiders, man.
Okay. Then that makes sense.
What's Sting? Is it a spider movie?
It is.
It's about a little girl who brings, I guess, a spider home. I don't know if it was another creature when she brought it home, but she basically brings like a spider home, and it's her pet, and she feeds it and takes care of it. But then it starts like eating people in the apartments and stuff.
Well, when you see the first Omen, there are spiders in it. So
there are.
Oh,
keep that in mind. like nice close-up shots of these little fuckers. So it's not a lot. Like it's not like a kid brings home a spider and there's a spider the whole movie, but there are images
some,
of spiders.
There's some
I'm sure, and that's fine. I just don't like there was that fucking Adam Sandler movie that came out recently where he plays an astronaut who finds an alien spider that's played by Paul Dano.
I didn't see it.
I was like interested when I heard about it. I was like, everyone's like, oh, Adam Sandler taking the role seriously. And then I saw the concept and I was like, I'm not watching that.
I saw some TikToks and it scared the living daylights out of me. It was like, and then I would be like, oh, what's this? Adam Sandler on the treadmill. And then the spider would like crawl out from a hole and talk to him, and I like shit myself immediately.
That's understandable then, Matt.
It's just it's such a shame because I'd like to watch it, but I need a arachnophobia friendly version of
the movie. Yeah, a version where it stings like Garfield.
Yeah, let him be a fucking cartoon cat or something. Because fuck.
I didn't get to go see. I wanted to go see Civil War. And I didn't get to.
Yeah, I kind of want to go see it too.
I don't want to see it.
That's fair. It's
definitely on the fence for me because like
after Men, man, I don't know. Like people say it's decent, but I don't know.
Well, it's not the Civil War movie I wanted. Like I want the like this is why the U.S. collapsed. This is the goofy, like I want it to be more goofy and action packed, and this sounds like you don't get. It's not very political. It's more. Some people have said it's very pro journalists. Some people say it's very critical of journalists, and some people say it's very like nuanced, and it's both. But that's not what I want from a like. I don't want a serious Civil War movie with what's going down in the States and democracy and all that. So. Right.
We're fine.
I'd rather see it than Godzilla Kong.
That's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm with you there. But I haven't seen Monkey Man. I'd rather just see that, you know.
I'll fucking cause a civil war during Godzilla Kong if I have to fucking watch that. Because goddamn.
Yeah. I also know, I think this week Guy Ritchie's new movie comes out too, which I look forward to.
Which one's that?
Gentlemanly Warfare movie.
Yeah.
The what?
Gentlemanly Warfare.
Henry Cavill. Yeah. I really hope that's good.
Same. I like Guy Ritchie. I like Henry Cavill. And so I hope it's good.
Yeah, I've been meaning, like, I've been trying to convince friends. Like, I hate that I'm, like, the only person that would be willing to do, like, a three-movie day.
I'd do it with you.
I would love you to do it with me because I was like, hey, man. Monkey Man at 1, First Omen at 4, and then what was the 7th one? I think
the 7th? You mean the 3rd?
Oh no, the 7 p.m. one.
Oh, gotcha. I was about to say 7. I was like, I don't know if I can do 7.
No, that 7's a bit much.
7 would probably put me in a grave.
And then I think like 7 o'clock might have been Love Lies Bleeding or something. I don't know.
I never got to see that, and it's gone from my theaters now.
Yeah, same.
Hear me out. I feel like the next time there's like a period where there's 3 movies coming out that we all want to see, Matt, you gotta come down. We'll get Mikey here, convince Jay. We'll just watch movies back to back to back.
That'd be dope.
Oh yeah,
I'd be down.
But we're not watching Jaws until Stuart comes up here.
Oh, right, is now that the rule now?
I got it. We gotta watch Jaws in Canada.
Stuart has to go north of California to watch Jaws with me.
So it could be
Seattle, Oregon. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
You're not missing much, to be honest, Matt.
Yeah, I've heard it's not even a real shark. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's
fucking
it's
stupid.
Yeah, they don't even shark that much.
Well, maybe one day we'll watch Jaws and we'll live happy lives after that, Stuart.
Do you think you guys would have sex after you watch it?
I would have sex after Jaws. Yeah.
With each other. I'm not talking about generally.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're going to be gooning the whole movie, so.
That's true. Well, I'm not. You two can.
Gooning. All right. Well, what is gooning? Happy also, gooning to y'all, everybody.
Wait, what's gooning?
What? Nothing.
No, I really need to know what that means, though.
I'll send you to a subreddit where you can find out. It's called Goon Caves. I'll send you a picture after this podcast.
Is this something pornographic?
Related. Adjacent.
It can be, I suppose. It doesn't have to be pornographic.
That's true. It really actually doesn't have to be pornographic.
Anyway, we'll see y'all next week. Next week for the game show, hopefully.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be Fridge game show. It'll be great.
For episode 150, because this is 149.5, right?
Yeah, no, this isn't this isn't our actual 149 again. This is 149.5.
All right.
Yeah.